Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
You're listening to Live Paranormal Radio at liveparanormal.com.
The views expressed here within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of liveparanormal.com.
LP Web Design, 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit liveparanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.
Welcome to Shriekfest Radio on Live Paranormal. I'm Jamie Lee, and we're talking about Shriekfest, the L.A. International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival. Denise Gossett is the Shriekfest founder and director and, of course, actress extraordinaire, and she helps us produce the show. She sets up all these fantastic interviews with the filmmakers whom she's met through Shriekfest, and so we're honored to feature these talented people every other Thursday night on liveparanormal.com. You can also get it straight through Blog Talk Radio if you go there and get the show, but it's a lot more fun if you join us in the chat room. It's absolutely free to go ahead and sign up, make an account, and join us, make a lot of friends at liveparanormal.com. Tonight, we're going to be talking with filmmaker. She's a writer, a director. She's done films and TV. Her name is Lucy Krull. You may know her as L.C. Krull. I guess that's been her pen name, but lately she said she'd just been going by Lucy. So we're going to call her up and see what's going on. And my gosh, this woman is completely busy, completely insane, all the projects that she has going on right now. I thought my life was nuts, but she's just got so much going on that we have to talk to her. So let's see if she picks up.
Hello?
Hello, is this Lucy?
This is she.
Lucy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for joining us tonight. So, Lucy Krull, screenwriter, director, and, of course, we know you through Shriekfest. Denise Gossett set up the interview, and we're thankful to have you on tonight. So, you've actually submitted a few pieces of work to Shriekfest.
Yeah, Shriekfest is actually one of my favorite festivals. It's one of the ones that I started submitting to when I first started writing, and I went out when I was picked to be a finalist and met Denise, and she's just an incredible, wonderful person and is just so devoted to film and the genre and finding new talent that, you know, I just kind of fell in love with the festival and have submitted several things since. And since it kind of followed my progression as I started off as writer and somehow ended up writer-director. And so I've been in different categories and won in a couple of different categories since then. So, yeah, it's kind of been with me through the adventure.
Now, the one I noticed you had submitted was 31?
Yes. 31 is a web series that mm-hmm. I wrote and directed last year. It actually won Best Webisode at Shriekfest, and it was an interesting adventure. It was it's an idea that I had to do sort of an internet serial. As far as we know, it could be the first daily internet horror serial that, you know, that had been out, and it's like 31 episodes, and each one's 31 seconds long, and we showed one every day for 31 straight days for a solid month, so that everybody could turn in, you know, at 3:31 every day and see a new, you know, see a new episode and end with a cliffhanger. And, you know, it's just an idea that came to me, and we realized nobody had done it before, and people got really excited about it, and, you know, I wrote up a script, and we got some incredible talent, and it just turned out really, really well for something with no budget. You know, we had really exceptional people, and, you know, I learned how to write an episode of something in half a script page, which was a bit of a challenge. You know, it definitely made me a better writer and director, having to keep to like a 31-second format to tell, you know, to move a story forward and creep you out and leave with a cliffhanger and then do it 30 more times. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, it worked out because I watched it, and I watched it at work, and this was released, what, on 3/31 of 2011? So now you can watch it in its entirety.
Yes, you can.
But I can't imagine having to wait, you know, every day tuning in and coming back, because it would really leave you just that 31 seconds. Kind of reminded me of kind of like the feel of Saw, and kind of like a psychological thriller, and I really enjoyed it, and getting to watch the whole thing. If you go on and you watch it, you're listening at liveparanormal.com or through Blog Talk Radio, you can watch it right now. It's actually on YouTube, and I watched it, and I had to keep coming back and watching it because I work at a radio station, so I'd go in the air, and I'd come back. The computer would shut off. I'd have to restart it again. So I watched it in an increment of like five different periods. And I had to watch the whole thing because it leaves you hanging. You had to keep watching it. So it ends up to be about 16 minutes when you sit there and watch it in its entirety. And it's amazing. It's worth watching. It's so well done.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I loved it. And you guys can watch it too. It's youtube.com/user/ 31 web series, and that's the number 31 web series. And wow, what an awesome piece of work. Oh, and make sure that you guys stick around because there's an alternate ending too.
Yes. We thought we'd give them a bonus while we were at it, you know, because I don't know, we found this extra part of the location that was so cool that we were like, we just got to do something with it. So we just decided to give them that because we got, you know, this location that we just had to do something with. Everything that we got in, you know, and everybody that was involved was just, again, incredible because we had no budget, but we had great people and really devoted to making it the best product that we could. And so I was just thrilled. I was beyond thrilled, actually, by how it turned out and how we managed to pull it off. And, you know, even getting something to get released every day at the same time is trickier than one would think. So every single part of it was an adventure.
So do you think you'd do this again after having to do this? And what a pain in the butt this must have been to do this every day and get it, like you said, there at that specific time. Would you do it again?
I may have to. You know, we gathered a fan following and we got great critical reviews. Thanks to all the critics who, you know, checked it out and reviewed it and gave us, you know, such great word of mouth, because we had no publicity, you know, budget. So it was just all through, you know, critics, word of mouth, people at, you know, everybody from TV Overmind to Planet Macaw, everybody was just really great. And so, you know, there's an interest in more, and, you know, everybody's kind of interested in doing another one. So if we, you know, if we can find sponsors, I actually would like to pay the crew this time if at all possible.
Yeah, that'd be nice, right?
That would be nice. I appreciate that they're willing to do it any, you know, anyway, but
sure.
I really would like to, you know, to do more than feed them. And so, you know, there might be a second run of it where we'd see more of the story. I actually have the whole backstory, you know, kind of together, and so I could do another run of that. So we very well may. We have a producer right now looking for a sponsor or something so that, you know, a sponsorship deal so that we could do another run. And also there may be a feature in the works. There are a couple of producers who wanted to see a feature version of it, and so I'm willing to give it a whack. So there will be probably more 31 probably very
good.
Soon.
I mean, it was done really well. Like I said, when it kind of opened, I kind of got the feel of, you know, I don't want to give it away. People looking that want to go check it out on YouTube, because it's definitely worthwhile to go check it out. It's only going to take you 16 minutes to watch it, and you're not even going to notice it 16 minutes because you get so enthralled with it. That's why I was getting so frustrated that I had to keep running and go back on the air, because it's like, oh, you know, I'd watch 5 minutes of it, have to leave and come back, because I was getting sucked into it. It was very well done.
Cool.
I could easily see it as a feature film, a show. There's so much you can do with it. So we're looking at not only another web series, but another web series continuing with this format.
Continuing
with
that same story, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And when you say no budget, you mean no budget, because what was it, like $390?
$390. I pulled off an entire web series with $390 and a lot – Necessity and Poverty, the Mothers of Invention, apparently. So, yeah, I still am not exactly sure how it happened, but it was the idea and the script, and it just – we got – actors who would call us back 30 minutes later and be like, I want to do this, and locations that were like, I mean, you know, oh, we want to be, you know, we want to be a part of this. You know, it's like, do you need this aisle clear? Do you need these crates over here? I mean, it was just this concept just seemed to really, you know, spark something in people, and they just kind of wanted to get involved, and it was awesome.
It turned out awesome. I mean, because when you hear like $390, what do they shoot this with, a camera phone or something? Like,
well,
what is this going to be? And you look at it, and it's like, wow.
Our crew
amazing.
Was like, because we shot in Atlanta, and one of the cool things about shooting in a place like that is you have a lot of really talented people who do commercial work during the day, but their heart is, you know, in narrative work.
Sure.
And so they have the skills and they have the equipment, and they're dying to do something like this. I mean, I auditioned for free all the work that this was going to entail, and as quickly as it was done, because I only came up with the idea on September 17th of that previous, you know, fall, and I had to, you know, choose between like three different editors who wanted to do this, you know, and knew there was no pay, and knew there was, just because they wanted to be a part of something that they thought was, you know, going to be cool and going to be, you know, a stretch and something fun. And so we had, you know, Amy Peterson was our sound person, Mike Bruno our editor, Stephen Swigert our DP, you know, just the best of the best, and yet, you know, in there doing it for free and loving it, apparently. So, you know, and not killing the director, which was, you know, very helpful.
Right.
So
now,
it turned.
Were you the screenwriter and director on this, both?
Yes, I was both.
So
I
what
started,
was that like, having to do both roles?
It was cool. I started off as a, you know, just wanting to kind of be a writer, even though I directed some student films and stuff. I just never really saw myself, you know, in charge or whatever, and just kind of like the behind-the-scenes thing. And then at some point, I realized that one of the best ways to get your work out there is just to direct it yourself. And so I started doing some shorts. I think my first one was Why I'm a Dog Person. It's like a little comedy short that's out there on YouTube somewhere. And I'm a cat person, so it has it's completely an ironic title. But, you know, and it's like a, you know, dark comedy that people like, and I may actually end up doing a couple more of those and doing a web series. But I have, you know, scripts and stuff, and I just started filming things. And when I got the idea for 31, it just took off. And once I got the script so that we had these 31 episodes and we had the cliffhangers, and it was like, and it actually clicked and it worked, it's like, it just, you know, it just fit. And I knew how I wanted it done, and I knew how to make it look, and I knew, you know, it just clicked for me to be the director on that, and it was great. I mean, I fell in love with directing, you know, at this point, and so I'm probably not going to I wouldn't direct everything I write, because I write too much, but I wouldn't be giving it up anytime soon. It was challenging, but oh my God, it's just, directing is fun to see, especially if you wrote the piece, to see your words acted right out on screen and your characters come to life, and to watch and, you know, make a shot happen. A lot of the fun of directing, I found, is in the editing studio when you add those final touches and it all comes to, you know, to perfection, and you're just like, oh, this is exactly how I wanted it to look. It's just, you know, it's a great feeling.
Because I would think it would be frustrating being just the screenwriter and not having anything to do with the direction, and something comes off totally different than, no, that's not what I was thinking. Or you might be surprised, and they take a different twist on it and do something a little bit different. So I guess it could work out good or bad, depending on the situation and the person you're working with as director.
I think it, like, for me, depends on how, you know, depends on if I feel a link to the story that I feel like directing it. Like, with 31, I really knew I wanted to direct that. But if it got made into a feature, I'd probably still want to direct the web series, but I wouldn't have to necessarily direct the feature. Like, I can let a lot of the stuff I've written go, but some of them call out to me. Like, some I can see so well that it's pretty much, you know, already directed in my head, so I might as well go ahead and, like, focus on those. But there are other scripts that I'm like, here, have at it, you know, more power to you.
Yeah,
see what you can add
it
to it, you know. Yeah,
yeah,
it's like,
but yeah, you're right. If it's already in your head and you see it, then why take the time to explain it? Just do it.
Exactly, and that's where, you know, and that's how it got started. And the only, you know, the most frustrating thing about it was, honestly, the takes had to be 31 seconds long or less. And so we have, you know, a PA here with a stopwatch. I mean, it was, we were in a situation where every frame, every second counted. So we really, and yet we only had 2.5 days to shoot in that location. And so it was, you know, some intense takes and intense working days. But again, you know, great crew, great, you know, actor and actress, you know, with Ben and Becky, and just, you know, it just wonderful people, really committed to a project. And that's, you know, seems to be the recipe for success when it
right,
comes to independent
right
filmmaking.
Great crew.
Yes.
Well, and what
very
I
key
liked about me coming in and watching it, having not been experiencing it as it was originally released as the 31 second web series, was that I could go in and watch it and I couldn't tell where the edits were. I couldn't tell where each of these webisodes had started. I mean, it was one complete piece. Because I was thinking, well, how is this going to be? Is it one piece? Or, you know, so it was put together really well, all in one piece when I saw it. You couldn't tell. Everything flowed very nicely. And, you know, it was just really enjoyable. So, again, you guys on Life Paranormal or Blog Talk Radio, go check it out on YouTube. That is YouTube. /user/31 web series, and you will not be disappointed, because you'll be blown away at, what? This was a $390 production? There's no way. So you must have had a lot of stuff donated, like all those crates.
Yeah, the location, you know, basically the people were so incredible that they just let, you know, they just let us shoot away, and they would clear things like that. The opening shot of that long aisle, they cleared an aisle for us, whatever we needed, you know, to have moved, and they just let us shoot there all weekend, and, you know, had a representative there, and that was about it. And I had, you know, it was really something. I mean, there's something still kind of special to people, you know, and I don't know if it's different shooting in LA, but, like, outside of the, you know, general film industry world, where they just want to be a part of something and see their names and the special thanks, and they just think it's really cool, and, you know, and they just kind of want to see it happening, you know, and be a part of it. And it just kind of got that excitement going, and, you know, and it was something different. Like, when you said the part about it being a complete story, that's part of what we were kind of trying to do, is, like, combine the best of, like, television, the internet, and a movie all into one piece. It was kind of an experimental thing where it's like, can we tell a short film in a kind of sort of television-like structure where it's every day, same time, you know, it's like, you know, the same amount of time, same time every day, within the brevity of the internet attention span? Because if something, that's why I don't end up watching a lot of web series, if it's more than two, you know, 2-3 minutes, anything, I'm gone. You know, it's like my attention.
Me too, ADD, and I'm out.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I can't have a window open on my screen and not go to another window after like a couple of minutes. So for my attention span, it was perfect. And so that kind of like just tied together with it. It's like, can you tell a story like this? Let's see if we can. And, you know, it was kind of cool that, you know, it worked out.
Well, and I think that was perfect for the web with the idea of every day for 31 days, 31 seconds, because really the people who are watching this sitting at work and wanting to go in and tune in for something like this, they're not going to have time to sit and watch a full-length feature. Well, in most cases, where they're just working. Where they could go, they could log on every day and get that quick little bite of like a soap opera and be satisfied for the day, and the next day look forward to logging in again with that quick little moment before their boss comes in and catches them. I think it's perfect for the people that would be using the internet.
That's definitely what we're, you know, kind of working with and playing with and hoping for. We've gotten since about 4 distribution deals on it, and part of what they do, you know, is they'll send it to mobile phones. You know, it's like where you can just, you know, I've got 31 seconds while I'm sitting on the train, you know, let me watch an episode. And probably, you know, if we do a second series, it'll be set up where, you know, you can get, you know, some app and, you know, it can go through, you know, ding, here it is, the new episode at 3:31, and it can go straight to your phone or something like that. But, you know, it fits that, let me just come here, have a taste of it, and then,
and then
I'll see more tomorrow. And the cliffhangers thankfully worked out and, you know, helped pull people, you know, from day to day. And even if, you know, at 31 seconds, even if you miss a couple of days, you can catch up pretty quickly. So that was also a bonus.
Well, it worked out, and one of the things I like to ask when we bring on all these filmmakers is, because you guys are so creative, being in the horror and the sci-fi and the fantasy genre industry, is you guys are so creative, and I like to ask them, where do you go in your mind to come up with this stuff? Like, how do you get in that mindset? I like asking them all, because I find that everyone is different. I've had people tell me, well, you know, it just comes to me. I don't know. I'm out on the boat, and it just came to me. Or I have people that say they actually go away for a couple of days, and this is their writing time, and they knock it all out. So what kind of person are you? Where do you have to go? How do you get in that mindset to do this?
I think I'm more one of those it just comes to me sort of people. I have, you know, I've always been one of those people who have like really expansive, adventurous, epic sort of dreams, and I remember my dreams very well. So a lot of weird stuff comes out of that. I've done, you know, I read a lot of books, I've watched a lot of films, and, you know, ideas just kind of bounce off each other. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be neat if this happened or that happened? And they come at me at random times. I mean, the idea for 31, I woke up that morning and was like, oh, I'd kind of like to do that. And, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything I wasn't thinking about a web series. I wasn't thinking about that idea. It just came to me. You know, some are, you know, straight out of dreams, and others are, you know, I'm writing one now called The Loft that's based on this location and this is a feature. And it's, you know, a set of lofts that has a 1920s high school that was built on a 1920s high school, and they've refurbished everything, and so it's got all these creepy shining, you know, hallways with like lockers down, you know, it's just an awesome location, big empty auditorium, and just, you know, creepy pictures of like kids and, you know, weird outfits from the 1920s. You know, so sometimes it can be the location or just a what if idea, you know, or a character or something that happens to you during, especially with horror, somebody kicks you off that day and you're like, you know, I want to kill this person off who just cut me off in traffic. Let me put them in this story. And then I can get, it helps you stay calm. It's like it's a zen thing, really, a lot of times.
Yeah, so with the location, have you found that sometimes you find the location before the story? Like you write something around this really cool location, like you're saying with this school, that, wow, I've got to write something so I can use this.
Only like a couple of times with me. That's usually not the way my ideas work. I mean, it just happened that it was, you know, my location manager on another shoot, you know, said, you just got to see this place. And, you know, I so love that kind of like, you know, haunted building, you know, kind of scenario, that echo of the, you know, something tragic in the past, that I figured, you know, for this location, I'll write something around it. But for the most part, I just write the idea, and then, you know, as the locations or the whatever come in, you know, I write them down or up, to go with the idea. I mean, I never knew we were going to get a location as great as we did for 31. So, you know, with the initial idea, it was like a shed in the middle of, in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere, with like two actors and, a wooden door or something, but then this huge, warehouse location came on, and all these other locations and all this stuff. And so, I kind of just, it's the idea usually just comes to me, and then I have to just kind of work it out and then do some research and see if I can find some cool stuff, to go with it. That's, I always like to add, some factual stuff that like works in well, and
right.
Most
be
of my
historically
stuff,
accurate with it too.
Yeah, and most of my stuff kind of explores, I think, questions I have myself about, how the universe works or how you deal with the situation, or just different things that I'm working out in my own head. And so, they end up working out on screen.
Again, you're listening to Shriekfest Radio. I'm Jamie Lee, and we are talking with Lucy Krull. You may know her as Elsie Krull. Also, she's a screenwriter, director. If you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, you may want to go to our website, liveparanormal.com, and you can join in on the chat room, and we have a lot of fun. You meet a lot of friends there, and it's absolutely free to make an account, and you can listen directly off our website. Also, if you want to call in, unfortunately, from where I do the show, I'm not able to get into the chat room because they have a firewall. But I could talk about and plug the chat room all we want, and we do take guest call-ins. So if you have a question for Lucy while we have her on, we'll have her on for the next 30 minutes, that call-in number, someone could put that up in the chat room, because I know we have a lot of regulars that listen in, too, and they like to help out, and they know the guest call-in by heart. But it's 619-639-4606, 619-639-4606. So if you have a question for Lucy, we'll be talking to her for the next 30 minutes. Now, I'm glad I have you on, too, because, for one, you're so much fun to talk to, because you never know. Sometimes you get people on, you get to drag the stuff out of them.
Yeah, well, that's
forever,
never been my problem.
But, no, it's so much fun to talk to you. And also because I don't think we've had a female filmmaker on the show up to this point.
Really?
I think you're it. Yeah, so it's glad to be – thank you for representing the females tonight, because I don't think we've had one. I think you're the first one. And
that's
cool. Yeah.
I mean,
so,
in a way. It's cool to be the first one.
It is, because, I think being a female, being in the entertainment industry, with screenwriting and directing, I don't think that we get a whole lot of recognition as the men do. And we should, darn it.
We definitely, it's definitely been, an issue that, a lot of articles have brought up lately about how the, women are getting even less and less represented behind the scenes as, directors and producers, and, why, how is this disconnect happening, in Hollywood between, who's making the movies and who's getting hired, because there's the talents out there. And one of our other projects actually is just about women in horror. It's called Mistresses of Horror. And myself and two other screenwriters decided to, it was a finalist in Shriekfest as well as them, actually. And we decided to get together and write a horror anthology. And it, combine six of our short films and do a wraparound. And the idea is for it to be, the first horror anthology that was completely written by women and is completely directed by women. And, when we first came up with this idea, we got a lot of, are there even seven directors out? Every director I know has been told she's only one of, one or two directors. Meanwhile, we have a Facebook group of women, of horror directors that's almost 400 people, across the country and across, in some in other parts of the world. But there are a lot of us out there and very talented women there, and we're in the process right now of attaching directors to each short, and these are talented women, with multiple features under their belt. So we're hoping that project, if we can get it off the ground, the goal would be to start a franchise, basically make Mistresses of Horror a brand name, and do like a Tales from the Crypt, anytime we wanted to, put out a different movie, Mistresses of Horror Presents. And the only thing is, it's just horror, great horror created by women for everyone. and
I
you know
like
just
that. Yeah.
A showcase and a launch pad for women in horror and showing, you know, people that were there, because I think there's, you know, just still this feeling in Hollywood that there aren't, you know, female horror people, you know, that there aren't even seven horror fans, say nothing of seven horror directors,
right.
You know, and it's just so not true, you know, and so hopefully we'll be able to get that off the ground, and we would really like that to be something that, you know, could be like a multimedia, you know, have everything from graphic novel artists who are female to, you know, just, you know, anything we could spread it to, you know, that's the goal with that one.
That would be huge. Now, the other thing I was interested in asking you about was, it looks like you're doing a supernatural television series, Neff. What is that?
Neff. Yes, that's with producer Karen Lamb and her companies Opiate Pictures and Curio Media. It's a television concept that she optioned of mine, that it's basically the story of the last six Nephilim, which are, you know, where I love, like, research, and I love, like, you know, mythological stuff, and this is from, like, a sort of Christian mythology type thing. The Nephilim are descendants of fallen angels and humans, and so these are the last six left alive, and they're considered abominations by both the forces of good and evil, and everybody's trying to kill them, and so there they are stuck in Vancouver trying to, you know, survive,
right.
You know, and it just kind of, it touches on a lot of, you know, this kind of, you know, feeling in society of not having any place, of being like, you know, if you don't fit in here and you don't fit in there and you're just kind of on the fringe, what do? You know, how are you valued? How do you get by? And, you know, they kind of live in that world and are just kind of trying to stay alive. And there's a whole, you know, storyline to the whole thing that goes into, you know, the, you know, good versus evil, this versus that. But it's mainly the story of, you know, a brother and sister who are fighting to survive and finding to find their way and fall in love. You know, she wants to fall in love for the first time and still trust each other and not have that tear them apart. And, you know, it's just characters and bonds and friendship and stuff like that, you know. So we'll hopefully we'll go into production on it within the next year and a half or something. So
We shall see. So you guys are going to start shopping the pilot then pretty soon?
Did someone already
buy it?
Well, she optioned it because she's a Canadian. There's some, you know, I don't know how many people know about the rules between Canadian and American companies, but Canada's kind of protective of its, I don't know, of its intellectual property. So it just makes it tricky to do contracts between, you know, Canadian and American companies. So she optioned it through her company, but she does plan to produce the pilot. So hopefully we'll be able to, like, actually have a filmed pilot that we'll be able to shop, which would be awesome, you know, and I would love to see it, you know, on Canadian or American TV, either one. But, you know, it's a very exciting, you know, because it's dark and it's edgy and it's not, you know, cutesy, you know, it's not, you know, it's not light. I actually initially wrote it for MTV. They were, when they first started looking for horror series, and
right.
You know, the guy who was, like, pushing the idea was like, yeah, we want dark, you know, and, you know, just take it to the edge. And so I did, and of course they went with Teen Wolf, but it's still good. Teen Wolf is actually good, but it wasn't necessarily. Yeah, it's, you know, it's actually, you know, well done show, but it's not, you know, what I was going for. But yeah, it ended up being a, you know, I thought a really good pitch, and she really fell in love with it, and she is an incredible, incredible producer, brilliant woman, and so, you know, I have the highest hopes for it.
Because I know, being that we are a paranormal website, which I know a lot of people automatically think, oh, ghosts and ghost hunting, it encompasses everything. You know, we have people that are, you know, fans of Bigfoot or UFOs or the show that I used to host, Exposed History. We did more of, talked about Atlantis and Egypt,
yeah.
and Easter Island, different things like that. But it seems like all these teams and all these people that we have on Live Paranormal, there's a lot of them that want to get into doing reality TV or doing their own pilot. And so I know I've had some people ask me, you know, to ask some of the filmmakers or people who are, you know, also doing some TV work, how do you even shop a pilot? Like, how do you even get started? Who do you go to? How do you do that?
That's a very good question, because that just kind of happened. But I am actually shopping another one that's like called The Four, which is basically four losers discover they may be destined to become the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Oh, wow. That's a great concept.
Thank you. Everybody likes that concept. I'm glad. And so I've actually written the pilot for that. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to shop it now. It's like it's such... you know, a maze, you know, is Hollywood. And, you know, everybody, you know, it's like everybody on one side says, get an agent or manager. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but they're like, well, we won't, you know, we don't want you until you've already made it. And, you know, it's just, you know, so
it's,
I'm just
it's
basically,
hard,
it's hard. It's basically like show it. I mean, my advice, you know, just off the top of my head would be, you know, I'll say what I'm doing is just trying to show it to everybody. You know, it's like anybody who's willing to take a look at it, you know, and, you know, try and get them during pilot season and look for production companies that have done similar stuff and, you know, just try and get people interested, because it's very hard to get to the people who can green light stuff.
Right.
And you have this great, you know, these great concepts and these great ideas, and everybody's like, oh, that's really cool. But to get it to the person who can actually do something about it, whole different, you know, I'm still trying to figure that out myself, you know. I still have not, you know, the minute I figure it out, I will tell everybody the secret, but I'm still trying to work it out, you know, because it seems like the other instances somebody has found me, you know, I just had stuff up, or I, you know, just started to meet people, and a lot of it was networking, you know. It's like I met Karen, she was looking for specifically projects by women in horror or supernatural, you know, type genres, and she just, you know, I sent it in, and she just loved it, and so, you know, just network, meet people, and show your stuff to everybody. Don't, you know, I've never been a proponent of the keep the project so secret that you can't tell anybody what it is, because how else are you going to, you know, build interest in it? You know, you have to share it eventually.
There's that other feeling of, well, if we go and we present this, they're going to steal our idea. You know, I think there's that fear too, but like you said, you got to get it out there and show people, though.
Yeah.
You can't be afraid to show it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know that people I've just never really had that fear, I guess. I've never... You know, it always seems to me that, you know, they could probably pay me off easier than it, you know, they could steal something from me. And, you know, I, among other things, you know, that I do, I'm an attorney, or technically I went to law school, whatever you want to call it. But, so I have a, you know, I don't feel overly vulnerable when it comes
to
stuff like
Harvard,
that.
Yeah, you went to Harvard. So we're not just talking about, oh, you went to law school. You went to Harvard. Like, honors.
Yep.
Harvard.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, yeah,
so
I did.
Were you originally thinking of being a lawyer or a judge? I mean, was filmmaking not where you wanted to go and you just kind of took this side path? What happened?
Actually, film was really always, I mean, well, at least since college, you know, it's like when I was young, I just kind of was into absorbing knowledge and just reading and living. And, you know, once I got into college, I kind of started wanting to tell stories, and I love film and TV, so I kind of wanted to tell those stories. And after I graduated with my ever so economically practical, you know, double major in history and medieval and Renaissance studies and minor in film, you know, that was ready
come
to
come in handy, though.
Yeah, you never know when the Renaissance will come around again, you know. So it was, what are you going to do? You know, it's like, so I graduated from Duke with those, and, you know, go Duke, go Blue Devils. And I graduated with those and just kind of applied to film school and applied to law school, because you kind of, law school is what you do when you're not sure what else to do. And so you apply to law school. And, you know, I got into USC screenwriting program, and I, you know, was planning to go to that. And then, you know, I got into Harvard, and that just kind of is hard to say no to. So,
yeah, I guess, right. Harvard,
yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll go.
Yeah, the big envelope from Harvard is hard to say no to. And so,
yeah,
you know,
I guess,
once I figure it's something I can always fall back on, but, you know, and I did, you know, work as an attorney for a year, and I still do some stuff from time to time. But, I, you know, my heart was always with getting back to film. You know, my main focus while I was there was entertainment law, and every paper I did was somehow obliquely related to the entertainment field. And, you know, I just wanted to get out and get back to it, you know. So as soon as I couldn't take it anymore, which didn't take me long, I got out and got back to writing. And now I'm, a thoroughly broke screenwriter, just, you know, as God intended. So there you go.
Do you find that having that background in law, has that helped you any with, I mean, the contracts and things that you have to go through in the entertainment industry? Because people really could take advantage of you in this industry, whether you're an actor or a screenwriter, director, whatever part, you could really be taken advantage of. So have you found that you kind of have the up and up, like, no, so you're not going to pull one over on me because I know what's up?
It's definitely, I mean, especially, you know, I came from a small town and didn't have like a, you know, any sort of business acumen or background or anything before I went to school at that level. And it definitely has. Like, I understand how investment and venture capital and things like that work, and in a way that I didn't before. In contracts, I've drafted so many. It's like now I have my own contracts that I, you know, usually use, you know. And so when I, like, sell a short, you know, like Seekers that won the short film at Shriekfest a different year, when I optioned that, it was using, you know, my contract. You know, all, you know, any shorts that I sell or option, you know, I use my own contracts. And so I'm able to kind of, you know, protect myself in every instance in a way that maybe someone, you know, who didn't know these things would need a lawyer to point out. Because you don't want to just get overexcited and give everything away, but you don't want to, like, you know, hold on too tight either. You have to kind of find that balance between the two. And you always want to write stuff down. One of the keys to happy living is any relationship, even if it's your best friend and you came up with an idea together and you're going to write it to Hollywood, write down, you know, how you guys are splitting the responsibility and what, you know, each person respects the other, and that's how you'll save the friendship no matter what happens. You know, it's like, it seems, you know, like, why would we want to put this on paper? We trust each other. Trust each other enough to write it down.
Yeah, I think so, especially in cases of friends and family.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially want to write it down for later.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when I was going through researching to have you on the show and just reading the volume of different projects you've done, I was like, this woman's going to give me a headache. Good Lord. She's like, she is into everything. I thought my life was nuts, pulled into 15 different directions and all the stuff I do. But, I mean, screenwriting, directing, you've done so many different kinds of projects. You even have some reality shows. What is the Cougar show that you're doing? What is it? Panther?
Oh, my goodness.
Panther Chase?
All those. Panther Chase. I just get these ideas, and when I get an idea, I just go with it. And so, yeah, there's one called Panther Chase, which is basically I dubbed the name Panthers. They're basically cougars of color, you know, who aren't attached and want to, you know, expand their dating repertoire. And it was just, you know, I had a reality producer friend, and, you know, she went and interviewed, there are a lot of women out there in their late 30s, and, you know, they're still full of life, and they've still got all this, you know, they've established themselves just like, you know, regular cougars, you know, but
regular cougars, right?
Yeah, you know, just like the cougar phenomenon. This is like, you know, to extend it to a wider group of people. And then there's another one called the Travel Girls, which is kind of for, you know, the young and the broke, you know, and the inexperienced, watching these two, you know, girls who are the same kind of travel and see how to do it and how to be safe and yet have fun and, you know, things like that. But those are the only reality shows I'm sure I'll ever have, because I never thought I'd have one in the beginning. But, you know, it's just when ideas come to you, that's why I have so many short films. It's just so easy to have a dream or have an idea and just shoot it out in, like, you know, 10 pages. You know, there's one, Flesh, that I may be directing soon here in Atlanta, and it's, you know, they just hit you. Features are harder, take longer, but, you know, filming is just fun. Writing is fun. You know, I love doing it, and if I could get to the point where I could steadily get paid for doing it, then I'd be in nirvana. That would be,
right? that would make a big difference.
That would make a huge difference, you know, because I love doing it. It's, you know, it's, I don't know. I feel like it's what I was meant to do, so.
That's where your passion is at, even though you've got all these other things that you've done and being a lawyer and all of this. That's really where your passion is at.
I think it's because I'm just, you know, a creative type person, so being a lawyer really was hard for me. You know, those 8 hours just kind of, or 10 hours or 12 hours or 14 hours would just, you know, would just crawl by, and I just got no satisfaction out of it in the way that, you know, a differently skilled person would do. And so, you know, I like coming up with new ideas. I, you know, and if it wasn't writing, then it would be businesses or it would be patents. I have ideas for, you know, board games, video games, you know, things to patent, businesses I would start, all the stuff, you know, that I just come up with and I write it down and I put it somewhere, you know. But it's just, that's kind of what I do. I just create. So
you do, yeah, you get an idea and you go for it, because you've even got, what, like a line of earrings?
Now, that's not mine. That is the wonderful Tanya Tomic. She made, she has a line of women in horror earrings, and she dedicated, you know, earrings to certain women in horror, women horror directors, and those are the ones that she dedicated to me. So that's Tanya Tomic, the wonderful.
So that's where that comes from.
Yes, yes. I don't, that's one thing I can't craft.
That's
or
one thing
I can't,
not getting into.
No, it's like I can't do anything that that deals with like hands-on crafting or sports or any sort of spatial relation type of thing in real life. I can't do any of that.
Not going to happen. We're not going to see any designer clothing or
no,
jewelry
no,
anytime soon.
No, no, not at all. It's that is not my skill, but, you know, too great. It's wonderful to see it in others, but it is not my skill.
But then you also have some screenplays I was looking at that look really interesting. Lizzie Borden has always been a story that's fascinating to me, especially being in the world of paranormal and being a ghost investigator myself. I know that story comes up quite a bit, and we have a lot of fans on Live Paranormal of the Lizzie Borden story. So it's a screenplay, and so it's not just about Lizzie Borden, right? I mean, there's a kind of a twist on it.
Yeah, it's called Lizzie, and it's basically it kind of follows the ghost of Lizzie. You know, it's like this museum that's opening up, you know, gets the axe, you know, purportedly used in the murders, you know, in the Lizzie Borden murders, and as its centerpiece for its opening, and when it comes to town, people start dying. You know, it's like it makes a connection to this other girl who is, you know, has the claustrophobic parents and the, you know, the stepmother who she, you know, is set up, has the same sort of situation that Lizzie had going on, and, you know, people start dying, and you don't know if it's because of her or surrounded by her, and it's, you know, it's a very sort of combination of the, you know, six teenagers go and like help renovate a museum and bad things happen to them kind of thing, you know, with the idea of this mystery, because, you know, there's a murder mystery in her life, you know, what happened to her mother, was her stepmother involved, and, you know, and then you've got the Lizzie character who's, you know, basically the spirit that's killing everybody, and it's like, it's, she represents the rage that was in Lizzie, you know, assuming in, you know, this take, she did it, you know, and the research was fascinating. I mean, the Lizzie, like you said, the Lizzie Borden story is absolutely, absolutely fascinating. The you know, the things with the evidence and the fact that it was at the birth of forensic science and they were just learning, but not quite there on how to, you know, test certain things, and, you know, how they dug up the skulls of the parents to try and see if they could figure out, you know, what was going on. And just, you know, anytime you have, you know, two bodies axed to death by like about 21 blows, it's going to be an interesting, you know, it's going to be an interesting story. And it was just, it's a fascinating, you know, it's just such a fascinating story that I kind of just wanted to modernize it and, you know, and put another spin on it. But basically, you know, but retell it at the same time, introduce people, you know, reintroduce people to the story. And, you know, I took the little Lizzie Borden song, and which is, you know, which isn't copyrighted, and like made a version of it that's like fits the story. So, you know, it's a cool little, it would be a fun film to shoot. Everybody dies in a very, you know, inventive way. And, you know, the characters are, hopefully I tried for fully realized and not just, you know, people to be killed off or anything. And, you know, so hopefully it'll be a fun little film if I can, you know, ever get it made.
So is that one that you're thinking about directing yourself, or you're kind of looking for someone else to help you that with that one, a bigger budget, and go bigger with it?
Yeah, I would rather someone else made that one. It's got a lot of, I mean, each death is, you know, I had fun with making very unique, and a lot of special effects and stuff. And I'm still a newer director, you know, and so the ones of mine that I want to do next are like The Loft, for example. I can see the shots, you know. It's like I went around and took pictures of how I wanted, you know, this to look and that to look. So since I can see it, that would be a good one to do as my first feature. This is a little bit, you know, probably it would be like a second feature, you know, if I did it, you know. But, you know, I'd be fine with somebody else doing it too. You know, there's one in there called Blue Bloods, you know, about vampires at an Ivy League school. It's kind of, it's actually drawn from life at Harvard, you know, where...
Are
there
vampires at Harvard?
Strangely enough, you would think so, but no. But what they do have at Harvard, because it's so, you know, horribly cold and covered with snow all the time, they have tunnels underneath the school. And so you never actually have to go outside. You can be...
Oh, right.
You know, go to school there, and, like, you know, the tunnels are basically hallways with lockers and everything, and you just never, you'd come up to your, you know, classrooms and come up to your dorm rooms, because it's such a big law school, it has on-campus dorms, and you never have to, you know, you just never have to go outside, and that hit me when I was there. I was like, when I get a chance, I got to do something with this, and so, you know, vampires at the Ivy League, you know, next thing you know, and so it's kind of the Skulls meets the Lost Boys kind of a deal, so.
And you won a couple awards for that. You were a finalist for Shriekfest?
Yeah,
for that one, and then winner of the 2020 screenwriting contest.
Yeah, all of them are, you know, it's such, again, you know, this industry and the time and, you know, the economy, all these things in which we live, it's still very hard to get, you know, from that, you know, award-winning, wow, your script is great phase to actually getting it, you know, filmed. You know, it's like, I'm actually having a meeting on Blue Bloods in the morning, though, so hopefully, fingers crossed, you never know how that's going
to
go. But
I'd love to see it, because it sounds like it would be interesting.
Yeah, it got backburnered for a while, because everybody kind of got burned out on vampires from the whole Twilight thing, and
sure.
It's not like, it's a bunch, you know, it's dark, it's back to, you know, the vampires I grew up with. It's like when I was a kid, I watched, you know, The Lost Boys. You know, it's like it's that kind of a, you know, darker, you know, feel. You know, still a fun movie, but not sparkly. You know, until now that that's kind of run its course, you know, it's like it's getting more interest again. So I would love to see, you know, I'd love to see it made. I'd love to see all of them made. You know, they're my babies. I want them to go out into the world.
They're your babies. We'd love to see more of it, too. Again, if you're listening on liveparanormal.com or Blog Talk Radio, you can always go check out, at least we know, the web series 31. That's something that you guys would be very interested in seeing. And you can go to youtube.com/user/31webseries. That's definitely worth your time of checking out. And, Lucy, we only have a few more minutes, so... any last advice for people that are up and coming, maybe trying to submit a project to Shriekfest this fall? Any advice?
Let's see. Well, Shriekfest is definitely a festival I would recommend if you're into the genre to submit to. And if you do get picked as a finalist, definitely come out. It's a good time, and you'll meet a great crowd of people. Best way to, you know, if you're trying to start out, just make sure it's good. You know, just keep rewriting, you know, until it flows and until you feel, you know, until you can have other people read it and, you know, they're like, wow, this is good. I couldn't stop turning the pages. Don't,
right.
You know, it's like you want it to be a page turner. You know, it's usually best if you know the ending first so that you can kind of foreshadow and pull people along to get to the end. And just, you know, you want it to be something that people can't put down, because outside of Shriekfest, they will read your script in Shriekfest, but outside of that, in Hollywood, apparently people don't like to read scripts, oddly enough. You know, so I have been told, and so the less print on the page, the more, you know, suspense in every word, you know, use, you know, great economy with your words, you know, it's like try and make them as powerful and quick as possible, and, you know, just make it a page turner so that even, you know, the busy producer who doesn't want to read another script, you know, will, like, get caught up enough that he'll make it through at least 10 pages and then give it to his assistant and then he'll finish it and then you might actually get a call.
Well, last question for you before we let you go. Since you did so much research on Lizzie, what do you think? Did she do it?
Oh, yeah, I think she did it. I think she did it. I mean, the things that she got away with because of the time. I mean, there was, you know, the instance of, you know, the bloody clothes that that had been burned, and the cops were like, oh, why, you know, were these clothes burned? It's like, they look like they have blood on them. And she was, and
right.
she said it was, oh, it was my time of the month. And they were like, what? Oh, don't want to hear about that. No, never, of course, never mind. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, how could you, but that's, you know, it's like things like that, you know, the axe itself, you know, which was also, you know, burnt and, you know, suspiciously, you know, in, you know, the incinerator downstairs, the fact that she was the only person in the house, you know, the any of the other people that it could have been, it really didn't fit as to why they would do it. And it was clearly, it was a murder of passion. You don't, you know, you hack someone 19 times, you know,
right.
you don't, you know, unless there's a true hatred there. And she was the only one who had a reason to have that. And at the time, they just really couldn't get their heads around the fact that a woman could kill, especially kill like that. And, you know, I think that was what she got away with. I think that's how she got away with it. They really could not get their, you know, they couldn't accept it. They didn't want to accept it. And, you know, based on kind of the rest of her life and how things went, it's just kind of, you know, there was no searching for the real killers. There was no, you know, there was no any
right.
thing to, you know, she just, you know, yeah, she just kind of like, you know, just kind of faded off and, you know, into the background. Although there are, you know, interesting side notes of, you know, how her sister, the one other person who could have known something, fell down a flight of stairs a few, you know, a couple of years later and, you know, died. You know, there were, it was an interesting case from beginning to end, but it, how they found her not guilty is, it really, it's kind of a sign of the times, because she just, they just didn't believe she could do it. You know, they didn't want to believe.
I think you're right, right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's my opinion. Is that, you know, what do you think? I'm curious. Do you
yeah,
think she
I
did
mean,
it?
In the research that I've done, I think she did it too. I mean, like I said, I want your take, since you've done so much more in-depth, me just being interested in it, but you actually doing a screenplay on it and going through all this. You know, I think the general consensus is that she did it.
yeah. So it was, I mean, it would have been it would have been like, you know, some random person, like there was actually a theory of some random person had just come in and just happened to kill them because, you know, some other killer had gotten arrested for some axe-related killing, you know, in another town. And they'd rather buy that than that, you know, the woman who was in the house and didn't hear anything.
Killed her own.
Did it. And so it was just, it was really, I think, a sign of the times. There was no forensic science solid enough yet to prove it, and what evidence there was, you know, like I said, she burned some of it, you know, I mean, some of it, you know, just slipped right through their fingers, and then they just didn't want to believe it. They just didn't want to believe it. And
I
also,
right.
most people didn't like the parents, you know, and so that,
I
think that had a little bit to do with it. It's like, you know what, you know, let's just let this go, let's just, like, walk away from it. Because it's just too much for them to deal with, and so they just kind of, you know, and it just ruined the rest, you know, their town became, you know, infamous for it, and nobody was happy with it, and everybody just kind of wanted it gone,
well,
you know.
Well, yeah, and it's still known for it today, so apparently it left quite a mark.
Yeah, no, but now at least they have a museum and a bed and breakfast, and they're, you know, making some things.
It's tourism, so they should actually thank her at this point, wow.
Exactly, they owe the woman much.
Well, Lucy, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. It was a pleasure. And if you're listening at lifeparanormal.com and Blog Talk Radio, make sure you go ahead and create a free account on lifeparanormal.com. And check out Lucy Krull's website. It is Krull World. That's Krull with two L's, krullworld.com. Lucy, thank you for joining us on Shriekfest Radio. Have a great
night.
Thank
you so much for having me. It was absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here.